The Midwest Regional Homebrewers Conference is coming to Cape Girardeau, Missouri, November 5th. The MRHC will feature a keynote from author Stan Hieronymus, seminars from Blickman Engineering, Matt McCarroll, and lots of exhibits and representatives from ingredient and equipment companies. Clubs from all over the Midwest will be setting up booths and serving their best beers. Come in early. The Hopheads of Southeast Missouri will be hosting a club night on November 4th for clubs to come and discuss homebrewing in all its splendor. Make your plans now. The Midwest Regional Homebrewers Conference, November 5th in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. For the love of brewing. For more information, check out MidwestBrewCon.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 8th, 2016. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Ricky the Meadmaker and Kelly Klein from Grunfell Meadery in Vermont share several delicious meads and tips that we can use in our own home meaderies. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again, everybody, clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, go to our site first, basicbrewing.com. Click on our Amazon ad on the right-hand side of the page. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes or Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry Podcast Directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're on Google Play Music. And we are on iHeart Music as well. We're just everywhere. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. I'm going on coffee and fumes this morning as I'm putting together a podcast. As if you need to know my my state of mind. There's a new Basic Brewing video episode out there, and I gotta say it's one of my favorites. I share my Blackberry Pilsner that I've been talking about on the show, which is very tasty. And Steve Wilkes uses it along with his Hoppy Sizer and my molasses mead to make a sous vide fruit with the high-gravity electric brew-in-a-bag system. Man, was that stuff tasty. The episode is fun to watch, too. Steve really has a natural presence on camera, and he certainly knows what he's doing around the kitchen and the brew pot, and it's always fun to get together with Steve, whether we're brewing or cooking or just hanging out. That episode was posted on Monday, by the way, and I hope that you had a great Labor Day weekend. The official end of summer. Now, if we can get the temperatures to cooperate and give us some fall time temperatures so that we can so we can get around the brew pot outside without sweating everywhere, and our fermentation temperatures won't have to be so high without refrigeration. The countdown to the 12th anniversary of our sponsors, High Gravity in Tulsa, is continuing. Desiree and Dave keep adding things to the list of good deals in celebration of their 12th anniversary. Now through September 17th, you can get 12% off orders more than $96. Just enter the code 12OF96. That's all one word, 12OF96, when checking out. And from now until September 12th, you can get 12% off all the high-gravity electric brewing systems. 12% off. 12% discount on their high-gravitas beer ingredient kit through September 17th. Plus, you can still take part in the raffle to give away a high-gravity brew in a bag system or $1,000 in credit towards a Brew Easy or Build Your Own Brewery system that uses the high-gravity controllers. You can find out all the details about that raffle on highgravitybrew.com. And the winner will be drawn on September 17th. Also on September 17th, Steve and I will actually be at High Gravity to have Basic Brewing stuff for sale and to sign from 4 to 6. That's the plan anyway. We may get there a little earlier. And we'll be at the party that evening, which will be at Burn Co. Barbecue from 7 till 10. And tickets for the party are on sale now if they haven't sold out at highgravitybrew.com. They are limited, so get yours quickly, and we hope to see you there. Find out about all this good stuff at highgravitybrew.com. You know, if they give 12% off for their 12th anniversary, here in 88 years, everything will be free. So that's a good inspiration to eat healthy and exercise. Okay. I don't know. Okay. This is a fun show. I've been holding on to this for a while, but this is a fun show. And it's got a ton of great information in there as well. I'd forgotten how, you know, we recorded this in June around the HomebrewCon. And so it's been a while since I've listened to it. I've forgotten how much stuff, good to hard information that Ricky and Kelly talked about that we can apply to our own home breweries. Anyway, you first heard Ricky the Mead Maker in our August the 20th, 2009 episode called Freestyle Home Brewing. And now Ricky and his wife Kelly now own Grunfell Meadery in Vermont and work in association with Havoc Meadery. More details about that relationship in the interview. They make a variety of delicious meads, and most have the ABV levels around typical beer strength, you know, so you can have a couple of them without, you know, regretting it. And they're sold in 16-ounce cans, so you can take them a lot of places that you can't take bottles. In this interview, you'll hear a ton of tips, like I said, including their method of using a hop tea to make their delicious hopped mead. So, now let's go back in time to Baltimore in June around HomebrewCon, where the group of usual suspects join Ricky and Kelly for a tasty mead and good conversation. Okay, here we are with Ricky the Mead Maker. Welcome back, Ricky.
Thank you. It's great to be back here in sunny Baltimore.
And you were on our show way back in 2009. So that's 7 years ago. You were in the back of Andy's shop, thehomebrewery.com. But now you have taken on a new life. Back then you were exposing us to beers that were kind of made, you know, out of the box or out of ancient inspired ingredients and such as that. But now, where have you been? What are you doing?
So I've moved back to Vermont, and actually all of that work inspired me to really focus on mead. Mead, historically, a lot of people use terms like traditional mead to mean a mead that's just honey, water, and yeast. But the deeper I dug in the research, I found that that's almost never the case. They were always throwing crazy things in there. And so with beer, you really had to think about it, had to think about your oxidation levels. But I now own and operate and am the head brewer for Grunfell Meadery with my wife, Kelly Klein.
And Kelly, you're his boss?
Yes, technically I could fire him.
We won't go there, hopefully today.
Those are good odds.
Also in the room, we have Mike Tonsmeyer.
Always a pleasure, James, when I don't have to be the one doing most of the talking.
You're just tasting today. And Bob Stimsky.
Anytime I get free booze, I'm glad to be here.
It wasn't free. You brought cheese curds.
Not even.
And Steve Wilkes.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Andy Sparks.
As always, great to be here.
Okay. And we have a desk full of meads as well, which excites me to no end. Now, you're talking about your philosophy of what you make. Is it what you make or what you brew? I mean, it's mead.
So I wrote a long article on my blog on Grunfeld.com about why the term brewing, linguistically, historically, is accurate enough, but I've never gotten in a fist fight over the subject. I'm pretty laid back, like most brewers in the world.
And you have a video podcast as well, right?
Yes, I do. Ask the Mead Maker. It comes out every other week, and I answer questions from people around the world. We, I think, just hit questions from 6 continents.
Wow.
Wow. So you can send your questions to Ricky, the Mead Maker. So what are we doing? We're just gonna taste some of your wares, and we're gonna talk about how you made them, how they came about, and all that, and just have a good time. I'm assuming. Let me get my tasting glass. Everybody's got their glasses now. Now Kelly, since Ricky's pouring,
yes.
What talk about your product line? What's your philosophy? What do you make? What do you brew? And what's your target? You know, you're the CEO. Give me the elevator speech.
Yeah, so what we make is craft mead. So I'd like to distinguish that from what most people are familiar with, which is honey wine. They're all meads. They're all made from honey. But honey wine would be your higher alcohol, still product, usually a little bit sweeter, but not necessarily. What we make is a craft mead. So it's closer to your craft beer, your craft cider, lower in alcohol, some carbonation there. What we do is almost exclusively completely dry. We don't like it to be overly sweet because without any bitterness and whatnot in the, you know, in beer you have grain bitterness, you have hop bitterness, but with honey, it's a little bit of sweetness goes a long way. Yeah. So we like it just to be nice and refreshing and very drinkable, very sessionable.
Mm. And what are we drinking now?
So right now we're drinking Valkyrie's Choice. This is our flagship. I like to use the term a straight mead, meaning it's only honey, water, and yeast in this. Now, we have a house strain of yeast, and it's been selected over, I think we just hit 18 iterations, 18 batches we've run it through. So it has all sorts of cool characteristics, and one of the cool things about coming to visit us is, if you're a home brewer, I'll give you free samples of my strain to play with at home. Our big thing is getting more people brewing. It's not like the homebrew movement has made a dent in the craft beer sales in America. I'd love more people playing, especially with craft-style meads at home. A lot of people are making honey wines, and honey wines are fine, but they're so different from what I'm making. Hmm. And what we're drinking right now, as I said, Valkyrie's Choice, 9.2%. Drinks, yep. Drinks like a light lager. I was really worried for a second when I cracked that bottle and took a sip, but then remembered I forgot to rinse my glass after a banana bread beer I just drank. So now that I've rinsed it, it's back to normal. So we use a single honey source for all but 2 of our products, and we can get to those in a minute. One of them's not released yet, so we don't have to talk about it.
So this is – go ahead.
Could you talk about maybe not the specific strain you started with, but is it a wine yeast or a beer yeast or what kind of – you know?
So absolutely. I used the Y Yeast dry mead strain originally. I have a really good relationship with Y Yeast Laboratories, and they answer all my silly, stupid questions. They defied me to use my strain to ferment lemon juice, but I told them the pH tolerance over 3 years now was so incredible I could – and did, and sent them a sample.
What sort of attenuation did you get on lemon juice?
It wasn't bad. What's called wasn't bad. But one of my products starts at 2.65 pH to give you an idea of what I can ferment in-house. And that's why I can't just use a laboratory strain anymore.
Wow.
Yes, originally, I believe the YU strain came from a wine strain originally. And we've just further pushed it in alcohol tolerance. And when you select for a few attributes, it turns out you select against something else. So we used to have this product that was crystal clear. Mm-hmm. So I've been selecting against flocculation. But you know what? No one minds a little haze these days.
Yeah. New England style.
New England style. That's, right. That's our new term. Yeah.
That's right.
We've been saying we were talking New England IPAs yesterday, mm-hmm. and that's you just have to. It's not hazy. It's cloudy. It's you know.
Wow, this is delicious.
It's very good.
It's got substantial mouthfeel. It's fairly dry, but it's got substantial mouthfeel, and boy, it tastes like honey. Yeah.
It actually is so dry that if you weigh it next to a glass of water, it's visibly lighter. That's
really?
How dry it is. It reads at 0.996 when we're done fermentation.
Well, I would not have no. said that.
Yep.
What do you think, Bob?
I think it was great. It tasted real fine, and I did feel a dryness in it, you know, and I really loved that. I really could drink this pretty off.
Pretty off.
Yeah, and the thing that impressed me mostly was that it didn't taste flat or flabby. Mm-hmm. A lot of meads that I've had, in fact, Michael and I were talking about this at lunch, that they just come across, I mean, my own meads, they just come across like, gee, I want some more backbone. I don't have the malt backbone, right? Or with wine, I don't have the tannins and all that complexity. And this one, I didn't miss that. I wasn't going, oh, gee, I wish. Mm-hmm. So good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's delicious. I like it a lot.
So do you do anything like, not back sweeten, but back tartan with with citric acid or anything like that? Or?
No, it's a straight fermentation. That's why my yeast strain is so important to me and I work so hard on it. Is our first batches were really crisp, possibly too crisp. They were lacking that something. Yeah. And so what we did was after three runs, I took my strain, split it between three tanks, ran it through three different products, and selected the two I liked best and mixed them back together. So it's actually now, we've split it a few times and put it back together, so we think it's a poly strain through multiple mutations. So there's just a lot going on. But the next thing we're going to try in a second is the only thing we currently have that doesn't have my yeast strain in it.
Well, we gotta get, since this is kind of a basic product, and you know we're talking to homebrewers out there, talk about tips about how you made this or how they can make this.
Right. So it's one of the reasons I have my blog and my show, because when I started mead making, there was a book, Ken Schramm's Complete Mead Maker, and more people have come out over the years, and I feel that there are a few things that most people suggest that in hundreds, I don't think that's an exaggeration to say hundreds of experiments, I disagree with. And one of the things I actually learned from you guys that put me on the track to what I have now, and that was get away from the wine yeasts to start. Play with your beer yeasts. And tomorrow morning I'm giving a lecture here at the homebrew conference specifically called Modern Mead Making. But really what the lecture is about is homebrewers know what to do. If you think about the product as I'm trying to replicate a beer, because let's be honest, pure sugar, there's a reason there are no pure maple syrup beverages fermented on the market. Pure sugar does not want to ferment. The yeast will crap out. It will give you weird off flavors. There's this thing in judging called young mead off flavor. And we don't know what it is, but we know it happens in meads and often doesn't age out. So the one big piece of advice is try to make it like beer. Focus on your mineral additions. You can never pitch too much yeast. If you have a sixth of your bucket full of yeast, you're doing great, because that's what you end up with sometimes at the end of a beer. But it is a hostile environment. So knock your CO2 back out of solution. It wants to stay in solution with something that doesn't have some of those constituents in beer that are going to help drive it off. Shake your bucket every few days. Keep that pH a little higher. The mead's going to protect itself. Whereas other things you shake, you're going to get oxidation or air inclusions. Mead is surprisingly robust.
So a little like making wine, when you degas the wine, do that with your meads as well?
During active fermentation rather than just at the end. Some wines obviously benefit from it, but a lot of them end up oxidized and sherry-like if you do that. Mead will resist that. Whatever compound sherries in grape-based fermentations, it clearly exists in the other products, but mead won't do it nearly as readily.
What about nutrient additions?
Dump them in. Figure out what the legal limit is and do 10% more.
So you don't do a step addition or a...
I don't. Originally, I did step nutrient additions, and then I thought through the process. What's really going on during your fermentation is you have this massive amount of reproduction right at the beginning. They're going to take up most of the nutrient right then and there. If you have, and we're talking, if you're a home brewer, 5-gallon batch, 12 packets of yeast, it's an awful lot. It's awfully expensive. But if you had that, you could skip nutrients altogether. Especially, and part of what I've got going on here is, you know, I can put pure O2 in and I can pressurize with oxygen. There are a few things that pros can do, but everything else, make a starter. Starters are cheap. And mead is already a starter for mead. Make a half gallon batch of honey and water, put your yeast in. 2 days later, put another half gallon in, put another half gallon in. Do it in the 5 minutes before you go to work. And if you're a no boil brewer, it's a matter of just mixing it up in another vessel and pouring it in the top.
That actually reminds me a lot of how sake is made, and that's sort of the traditional of stepping it up over the course of some time. And that, I mean, particularly if you're going for really high alcohol.
Absolutely. Sake, the only beverage that defeated me. I have successfully set up a pellicle on sherry in an oak-topped fermentation, and sake defeated me.
I made the authentic sake once. That was the worst 3 weeks of my life.
The worst every day, my up to your elbows. Yep, oh, it's awful.
Pruny sake infused arm.
Yep, and then you go to work.
Yeah. I had a fifth of Jack Daniels defeat me once. And that was the worst 3 weeks of my life.
So let me divert into my latest batch of mead. It was a 2 gallon batch. It started off at like 11:20 something, but I used two packages of Fleischmann's bread yeast, hydrated. I did a step addition. I did a quarter of the amount of nutrient at pitching. The next morning, I shook it to get the CO2 out, added a quarter more of the yeast nutrient. Like the third day, I think, I came back and I shook it again, and I added it. By the fourth day, it was done. It was done for me, and I didn't want to add any more yeast nutrient because it would have just sat there and not done anything. So do you think that I was way over pitch, or quote-unquote over pitching? Do you think that I was just pitching enough yeast in that 2 gallons that it didn't need to grow up and it just went to work and got the job done?
I mean, that sounds about right. I'm really still a home brewer at heart. In fact, we are specifically closed. The entire staff never works Sunday unless it's a brew festival, and we often all hang out together at homebrew on our day off. And I still have that home brewer thing where I'll run over to my tanks, which are 1,000 gallons now, and go, "Do you think it's fermenting yet?" You know, 15, 20 minutes after, and I'll look at the bubble lock. And so last weekend, what's really scary about that, we were talking earlier, I have a fermentation that starts at 2.65 pH, absolutely off the charts low. It takes 5 full days to start.
Wow.
But I had this new batch where I was using, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I was using not my strain. It was a dry strain. I just poured it in the top of the tank, just sprinkle it on top, walked away. We have an intern right now, and I'm like, "Hey, Morgan, do you think it's fermenting?" And she's like, "Yeah, it's been, what, 26 minutes? Go check." And it was. And it went from 80 degrees Fahrenheit to 86 degrees of active fermentation temperature in 12 hours,
wow.
And we pushed it back down, obviously, using our chiller, but just certain yeasts, if their job is in a hostile environment, because what's more hostile than a 120-degree oven?
My mother-in-law.
I'm staying with mine right now, so I'm not going to say anything.
Not really, Nancy.
She's a regular listener.
So that's one of the things is, everyone thinks champagne yeast. You know, that's where they give you the advice. The problem is champagne yeast is designed to do one thing, create alcohol.
Mm. Yeah.
Strips the flavors.
Yep.
Bread yeast is, you're playing with fire. But when I was on the show last time, that's what I've been fermenting with for weeks to see what I could get out of it. And I got a 14% barley wine with bread yeast. And that's the thing is if you've got the nutrients in there and, I mean, 2 packets of Fleischmann's, that's a lot more yeast than you're getting from brewer's packets.
It's selected to start fermenting very quickly. Yeah. We worked with East End Brewing in Pittsburgh, and they did a kvass, and they were pitching. It was like an ounce of Red Star bread yeast in 15 barrels, and he was getting fermentation within a few hours.
Yes. Holy smokes.
And with this tiny amount of yeast and this amount of beer, and boom.
And the thing is, I mean, my theory is that if you get that fermentation that quickly without needing all the growth, you're going to get less opportunity for off flavors because the yeast is not going to be multiplying and not going to be growing and not going to be putting off all those.
Is that nearly correct?
The risk is always, I think you may have done this study years ago, that if you don't have any hops in there, there may be some bacteria and you may get some souring.
Yeah.
But maybe if you're pushing it up to 12 or 13% alcohol, that's not a concern. But That's normally my concern with bread yeast. I've used it and gotten some sourness that I've attributed to the less than beer clean production methods.
Mm-hmm. And mead will protect itself with a lot of... There's a combination of the defense in A coming in from the honey, plus that very low pH. And if you're getting to the end and you're going to be carbonating it or backsweeting, you're sulfiting and sorbating anyway in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. So.
Or it's just that dry that there's nothing
there's
left.
There's nothing left to
yeah.
do.
Yeah. Yeah.
People ask me all the time if I have to sulfite and sorbate at the end, and I'm like... For what? It's going to start eating the inside of the can.
You're holding a can.
If I talk into the glass, it doesn't work as well.
Talk into the glass.
You've got a can there. Let me talk to Kelly while you're pouring. What's up with the cans, Kelly?
Yeah, well, we're up in Vermont, in Colchester, Vermont, and we started with some bottles, and we found that cans were really the thing. People love them. These are 16-ounce cans, and they sell way better than bottles. And we love them, too, because they are lightweight to ship. Yeah. They don't shatter and, throw shards of glass at people. And
you can also drink at public beaches in Vermont so long as it's not in glass. Oh, so cans are the thing!
Yeah, wow.
Mm. Now, what are we drinking?
So, this is my baby. Just came out. I wouldn't brew this for the first year and a half we were in business because I didn't trust my cleaning protocol enough. So, Nordic Farmhouse Mead is 85% honey, 15% cranberry in the primary fermentation, and we use the Belle Saison strain of yeast, poured right in the top, but we don't sulfite, and we control the temperature to allow the wild yeast from the raw honey we use to do part of the fermentation. Mm. So we ferment it hot, traditionally hot for mead, so high 70s, low 80s. And we just, like a true saison, bound the fermentation at 1,000 gallons in a stainless steel tank. It would kill itself if we didn't stop it at some point. But our house motto is never trust a Belgian. Nothing about the people, but every day it changes. And we were drinking it off the tank for a few weeks, and one day it was bubblegum, and it was just disgusting. And then the next day it was all tart. It tasted like pure cranberry juice, and now it's kind of settled to this sort of funky, cool, saison-y mead.
Speaking of funky and cool, what do you think there, Mike?
It's good. It's definitely not like a huge Brett character or anything like that. It's not a horse blanket or barnyard or anything like that. But it has there is that yeasty, bready freshness that I think so often meads are missing.
Right.
And that's, I think, one of the great things about these is that they aren't that aged out, huge floral perfume. I mean, it really has a lot of great character. And the cranberry, it's nice. It's not, you don't feel like you're drinking an Ocean Spray, cocktail. But it's adding the tannins. It's adding all of the acidity rather than relying on something
Any
in a jar
additions.
Or a vial.
That said, you can always add gin when you take it home, which is what I do most nights. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Mm. Bob?
I get a great cranberry pucker. Mm-hmm. Out of that, and that'll probably take care of my urinary tract infection.
Our electrician goes, so you ferment it with yeast, it has cranberries and honey, right? And I was like, uh-huh. He goes, do you think your brand should be Causes and Cures Yeast Infections? And I said, no.
Don't even need to pass that in front of Kelly.
No.
Steve?
Oh, it's delightful. It's lovely. It's I give it an 8. Mm. It's easy to dance to. It's got a good beat.
No, this is a good... This would be good on the beach.
Apparently. I don't get out much.
It's got a beautiful rosy color, and not like Mike was saying, the cranberry is just enough to give it that little tart crispness at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a teeny bit of astringency at the end, maybe, from the cranberries, but I think it's not... it doesn't detract at all from the thing, and I only got that on the first sip, and the further sips I don't taste it.
And there's this thing that, there are all those brewers that they're like, well, our IPAs are the most popular thing, but I hate IPAs. And you're like, you know what? I'll try your Pilsner. And I worried because Saisons as beer style, not traditionally my favorite style of beer. And another reason I put off brewing it, but we have someone on the staff now who's super into them. And he and I work together. We'll talk about him in a minute because he has his own meadery in the same building, also owned by Kelly. She could also fire him, which would be weirder than her firing me because he's a better employee. But that you feel it on your teeth kind of thing. And I don't love that sensation, but the number of people, they're like, yeah, I can feel it. I'm like, great, cool. It's the style for you.
So did you talk about it? I've been drinking. Did you talk about the percentage of cranberry juice in the...
15% in the primary.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
This would be, you could package this up for Thanksgiving very easily.
We do a lot of it in 2 weeks of November.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
This just came out, but we had another cranberry mead we sold in-house, and it did about 15% of its sales in those 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's tasty. But it is slightly funky. It's got it's got that slight of, you know... Yeah. Just a teeny bit of, I don't know if you describe it as barnyard, but there's a complexity there.
Yeah.
And we've harvested this strain, so this will be the strain until we don't like it anymore. We really pride ourselves on our yeast selection. And there's another brewery in Vermont that does exclusively sours called Hermit Thrush, and their library is 38 house strains. And we're going to be doing a collaborative version of this, possibly as a braggot with some really light malts. And play around with their collection.
And what's the ABV on this?
5.7. Everything other than the first one you tried is going to be 7% or under. That has to do with some weird regulations. And also, we wanted to have a mead that people could drink every day. Doesn't mean that every day isn't still a special occasion.
Well, but that's I think you said beer strength.
Yeah.
Awesome. Now we're moving on.
I mean, you told me how much time we had, and I just want to make sure it's an awful lot to drink today. Not all of it here.
Give us the Mary Poppins layering we can just, you know.
Wonder.
This is first sips delicious. Oh, cranberry. Is this dry hopped?
Wait for it.
Is this the everlasting gobstopper of beer this, of meads?
This is Chaos Sizer. This is a sizer, which means it has apple in it as well. A lot of sizers out there are like ciders with a little bit of honey in the back. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind those at all. Don't get me wrong. It's just not the way I brew mine. 90% honey, 10% apple, vanilla added in the secondary fermentation. Yeah. If I had known this Not Your Father's Root Beer bowl honky was going to take off, I could have just made this taste like a cream soda. But like before it came out, I'd tell people, it's like a grown-up complex cream soda. Well, serves me right for being ethical and all that jazz and not trying to market my product to children.
Not Your Father's Sizer.
Yeah.
I got the
vanilla. I was tasting it and I was like, what's that? Oh, yep, vanilla.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
We're honey to glass in 3 weeks for something like this.
Wow. Are you doing vanilla beans, vanilla extract?
No. So we do extract. And what's funny is, and I have been completely open about this, all my recipes are open source. Everything, all my honey sourcing is open source now. Originally, we were really protective of our supplier because I didn't want him to snipe me. We use about 20,000 pounds of honey a year, and I didn't want someone grabbing that supply chain. But we tried all these different vanillas. We have a commodities exchange guy who gets us our weirder things. We have a wassail, a traditional wassail that we make for the holidays that has raisin in it. And when I submitted it, it was a homebrew batch size submission. And then when I tried to scale it up, I realized it was going to call for 286 pounds of raisins. So he got me raisin concentrate, you know. He sent me all these vanilla samples from around the world, and they were excellent. We did a blind tasting, and Costco won. Costco's vanilla extract was incredible, and we are literally backdoor neighbors. I can throw a rock out the back of our facility and hit the Costco, which was handy, so it didn't have to come in buckets. But you'd be astonished how little vanilla is in this, given the size of the batch. I mean, I stand up there for a good 15 minutes pouring it in out of those little bottles.
Costco bottles. They're not tiny.
They're tiny compared to what I was going to have to buy through my commodities exchange guy. I think it works out to something like a teaspoon in a 5-gallon batch.
Well, that would be about what I put in.
Yep.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed so far, is this our third or fourth mead?
Third.
Yep. Yeah. Third. Is that what I notice about all three of them is that there's a breadiness, which I really like.
Bready?
There's a little breadiness.
Good.
Not bread.
Breadiness.
Bread. Yeah, and so that means I'm... Well, it's just there's a complexity to it that I really enjoy. And
a freshness. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I take it you don't filter.
We don't filter. We have this in-house only product called Lord Colchester's Overtly Pretentious Honey Wines. And people are like, oh, it's cloudy. And I say, no, it's hazy. Hazy's the fancy word. And, you know, originally we talked about it because I had these really pretty crystal clear products when we first came out. And my yeast strain has gotten lower flocculation over time. And I've just decided no one's complaining.
Yeah, let it be.
That residual yeast flavor is nice. I mean, I'm really proud of my strain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's delicious. I don't know that I get a lot of apple.
No. It's supposed to be way in the back. We use Spanish apples. So Basque region. So what you should be getting is not apple flavor like a lot of people would get from their local grocery store, but a true Spanish or British cider component.
Right.
So some of that acerbic tannic component that wasn't in the first one, same honey, same yeast, but that tannin structure you're getting is because we're using cider apples.
Yeah, we've been trained nowadays, especially today in the age of cider everything, commercial ciders, to be sweet, apple-y, child, kindergarten cafeteria apple flavor.
Right.
So in cider apples, you really can't eat because they're too bitter. They're too tart.
Yeah. One of our good friends who owns a cidery is working on the Lost Apple Project up in Vermont, trying to find the old Tinmouth and a bunch of other lost apples. They recently resurrected the Franklin apple. And when I asked a few of the cideries around, you know, who's local that I could work with to get cider apples, the unanimous reply was, no one in Vermont. And I was like, heard, cool. My brand, like, I'm really proud of the fact that my honey's from 4 hours away, but if I could get a better honey from 15 hours away that was at the right price for my customers, I'm not local for local's sake. I'm local because I can then know the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get cider apples domestically anymore. I think 118% of America's cider apple harvest was accounted for last year.
Oh.
Makes you wonder.
We've got one at home called the Arkansas Black.
Yeah, it was developed for
It's not an eating apple. It is a cider apple.
I say it every time we talk about apples on the show, but Arkansas used to be the apple center of the country.
It was.
Before Washington State and now South America, wherever we get our apples now.
Before refrigeration.
Yep.
What do we got here?
So, we are 2 meteries under one roof. I'm the head brewer for Grandfell. My former assistant, Eric, after a year working with me, we said, hey, do you want to start your own metery? And he said, ha ha ha, screw you, because they're not cheap to start. And we were like, no, seriously, we will fund you to get started. Your free hand as long as you brew within these bounds. Basically, you have to stay craft, and you can brew whatever you want. And 6 months later, he finally said yes. And he has a meadery called Havoc Mead, as I mentioned earlier. Kelly's also his boss. And he does still things for both companies. He does a lot of the design work for me. He actually designed every one of the logos for his own products, and he had never drawn anything before.
Huh.
So anyway, cool kid, but I'm one of those, like, the first batch of Valkyrie's Choice, the first thing we drank that I ever brewed was 1,060 gallons. I'd brewed a lot before. I'd brewed for a decade. Eric's brewed for about 2 years, and when he wanted to make Root of All Evil, his ginger mead, which I'm about to pour for you, I was like, how much ginger do you want to put in? And he's like, oh, I don't know. And I go, how much? And I gave him some profile, like, I've worked with ginger a lot. Mm-hmm. And he goes, okay, let's do a bunch of test batches. And I'm like, oh, let's just go for it. And so what we ended up with is this real bite. And there's lemon in it as well. The goal was not to be able to taste the lemon, only to know if it wasn't there.
Right.
So you'd miss it if it weren't there, adding some complexity. But he was very nervous coming out brewing 900 gallons of something. But I think he killed it. This is, I think, the most, it's more popular than any of my products.
It's the most popular craft mead in the state of Vermont.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just curious, why split off into another company? Why not just
have an assistant mead maker, right?
So we still brew together. The big thing for us is, you know, back when Woodchuck came to market, it was pretty easy for them to get a place on the beer shelf. This is the craft section. Well, now there's a craft cider section. But where do you put craft mead? And what we found is they kept sticking me with wines. I'm in 16-ounce cans, and they'd stick me with the other honey wines, and it made no sense. And the only places that were really moving our product were beer stores that stuck me in the fridge next to the ciders.
Right.
So we've talked to a bunch of the other craft mead makers, as if there are more than like nine of us in the country. But we've talked to all of them about cross-pollinating, basically all getting into the same states so that we can make up a shelf. And Vermont's the end of the road. No one wanted to come up to Vermont. 600,000 people in the state. We're a heck of a beer state, but we're really into drinking Vermont.
Right.
So the only way we could think that we were really going to get some shelf space was to let a competitor get going. And if we could fund him to get going, he actually has rights to take the company and run if he wants.
Wow.
It's, you know, verbal contract, but if he wants to take his products down the road to another facility, he's allowed to do it. It just wouldn't really make sense. As I said, they're really expensive to get started.
Yeah. So he's your shock top or blue moon. Or
Oh, poor Eric. Don't say that about him.
your high quality. But you're diversifying the market yourself. You're expanding the shelf space by making your own brand.
And there are a few big companies, and I won't throw anyone under the bus, but back in the late 90s, early noughts, they were doing this duplicitously. They would be out there, and the only way you'd know is federal law requires you put the town and state in which it's bottled on the package, and you'd pick it up, and you'd go, and I won't even say the town, but you'd go, how many breweries are there in this town of 1,200 people in central Vermont or in upstate New York or wherever?
Right. I was just down on St. John, and they have St. John Brewers. I looked at the bottle. Brewed in Portland, Maine.
So we wanted to be, because as I said, everything we do is open source, and I didn't want anyone to think we were pulling the wool over their eyes. The only difference on Brew Days is the recipes are Eric's. That's it. I operate the forklift, and he operates the thing that actually dumps the honey. We're both supposed to take the notes on our own products. Both of us forget to take the notes on our own products. up until, it was a year ago. Let's see, I've been for 3 years. I finally switched off of my little basic brewing homebrew book, which you gave me when I was last on your show.
More's the pity.
Yeah. It's a great little book, but unfortunately doesn't have like drum warming temperature time.
Oh, that's in the next edition.
Yeah, yeah, that's just what you need. Drum lot number. Temperature started warming. So all of our honey comes in. We used to do cold filtered. Now we just switched full raw. A lot of that body and that first one you were talking about comes from the fact that there's microscopic residual wax that's held in solution in it.
And pollen.
Yep.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
so it's we were really worried about it. Yeah. We were afraid we were going to get dead, angry bees in our product. But we found on package day, we sent it through two screens, basically. They look like the screens from your window. They don't filter anything out except angry bee parts.
I got a leg in mine.
Yeah. I haven't gotten a complaint yet. Though we do, we have a full bar, and we have 13 taps, and we have a few honey wines on tap, which are only available there, and we do experimental things, which are built in the keg, and we made a special product, 8 kegs of it, fastest selling product we ever made, called Fire on Snow, which is not a Game of Thrones reference. It's actually a reference to a treat from Vermont. But anyway, it was made with ancho chilies in the keg, which meant that peppers came through the tap. And I got to say, like, it was like designed to be like that. 9 out of 10 people thought it was super cool, and 1 out of 10 sent the glass back. Even with the warning, there are supposed to be pepper flakes in here. Think of it as a cheap Goldschlager.
Well, what do we think of the ginger?
I love ginger.
I like Marianne.
Yeah, I got you.
Sorry, I beat you to it.
Yeah. No, I've got a collection of ginger ciders at home and a couple of ginger beers that I brewed, and this is right in there. I mean, this is really, it's got that enough of that ginger sting that you know you got it, but not enough where it takes away from the drink. It's perfect. You did a good job on it.
No, I love those Jamaican ginger beers. I used to drink them a lot in college, and throw some rum or throw some whiskey in there. And now every once in a while I'll get one. I'll just go, God, it's so sweet. It's got so much sugar behind. And this is what I want. It's got just, as you said, that lemon back there. I probably wouldn't have told you it was lemon, but it's got a snappiness to it that I think is probably maybe partly to credit to the lemon and real good ginger flavor, some heat, but without being that's all you're getting. Or it's just, it's like eating a spicy food or something like that.
Yeah, this is making me want to go get Thai food.
Yeah.
I certainly see why this is popular. This is very drinkable mead.
Yeah, I think it's all about balance. I mean, honey brings sweetness, and then you have, the little bit of lemon, and then the ginger spice to get in there and cut that, and it's really nice. It's very drinkable. I mean, and it's fairly low in alcohol. We've been drinking meads for a while, and Tim Lieber usually is our mead guy. And we love Tim, and he makes awesome meads. But they're, they're mead strength. And if we had had this many of Tim's meads,
we'd be lying down for the interview.
Yeah, this plus my Claritin this morning, I'd be horizontal. And we're missing Tim this year, I got to say. This is the first year that we haven't talked to Tim, and we talked to him like 3 years in a row. So we miss you, Tim. And we hope to see you next year. So what do we got? The last of the, is this the last of the line?
No, we have two to go. I'm saving the brewer's favorites. So there's that thing where they come in and they're like, "Which is your favorite?" And you're like, it's like asking which is my favorite kid. Of course I have a favorite. I'm just not supposed to tell you about it. Yeah. I mean, I was a nanny for 5 years. I knew which one I'd save in a car wreck. And I'm not a jerk. I try to save them all. But Ian knew he was the one I was pulling out first. He just graduated this week. Congratulations, Ian. He would have been the right save. Nora is a doll, and so is Kate. Anyway, so...
But not as good,
but not as
good. Ian.
Everyone knows that. He's the baby. But anyway, so I'm saving that... So there is one that basically it's unanimous on the staff where it's going to be the last of the lineup, but when people ask, it's the one we're drinking during Brew Day. Cool. Everyone has a mug of it when the forklift is turned off and put in the corner, and it's all just cleaning. So, but before we get there... Psycho Pump, also from Havoc Mead.
It's not mine, honestly.
Steve at Airport Security today.
See, are you familiar with the term Psycho Pump? It's someone who comes for an individual on the edge of death. Just throwing that out there. I'm glad it's not yours. So, you thought the Nordic Farmhouse was a pretty color.
Oh, wow.
Look at that cherry red.
Wow.
So...
And some head retention, too.
Yes.
Some pinkish,
crazy head retention.
Some pinkish hue.
Pinkish hue.
No, pinkish hue. Yes, that's right.
So this is, as I said, also from Havoc. It's a sour cherry mead. Mm-hmm. And when people go down the line and hear about all the meads we have, it's the one that people usually go, no, thank you. And I go, you know how most things that are sour cherry are disgusting and taste like medicine? This isn't. Mm. And the reason for that is Eric sources his cherries from... there are only two places in the world who get them. Right now we're getting them from Poland. Other places, the Balkans, because they still grow what are essentially fermentation cherries. They're related, genetically related to the Marasca cherry, which is used for maraschino. Mm. So it's been bred for hundreds of years to be good in a fermentation. And I think it represents... 15-20, I don't know his recipe, 15-20% of the fermentables. We try to keep it every addition below 20%, so the honey is really what's going on.
Hey, this is James in the Edit Bay. Usually when we go on tangents, I'm able to edit them out in a way that you don't know that I've edited them out. But we went on such a mead-fueled tangent in the hotel room that I'm just going to cut right now to our tasting of the Havoc Mead Bitter Bee Hopped Mead. Mmm.
So.
Mmm. Oh, that's good. I love this.
This is the best.
What are the hops?
So we use the Seven Seas blend from Yakima Hops, or whatever they are these days. Mm-hmm. I think they're still Yakima Hops.
Or Hop Union.
Hop Union. I think they're the same company. Anyway, so this is the one. When I tell you that there is zero residual sugar in this, a pro brewer, Switchback Brewery, up by us, made me walk over to the tank and take a hydrometer reading. I was like, because he was just arguing with me, and I was like, I have the technology to prove. So this is the one. I'm surprised. I get a lot of actually really great questions about mead making on my show. I don't get as many questions about hops as you'd expect. And I've just been kind of surprised because we're really, really proud of the fact that we did experiment. We've done, the sixth version. And we loved version 5. But through a combination of people screwing up, this version's really different from version 5. And thank God, because we just released 650 gallons of it to the world on one afternoon. So we actually add the hops in several ways. So we're a no-boil facility. The hottest our mead ever goes is 102 degrees Fahrenheit. That's only for one product. Everything else is kept at 95.
Wow.
Some of our products will sulfite because, as I said, we have a house strain. But the nice thing about mead is you can use a lower sulfite level so that because the pH and a variety of other factors are working towards it. Mm-hmm. This one is the hops are added at a bunch of stages. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we do is this is – so we'll put a lot –
10
hop cones, 75 pounds. I don't know what it is. Anyway, the recipe's probably online. If it's not, I'll put it up there. It's also Eric's recipe. that was another part of the deal. He had to be open source with everything that he developed. So anyway, we'll take our mix tank, which has an on-demand water heater running in, and recirculate 185 degree water over the Seven Seas hops in bags for an hour, replicating certain aspects of a brew day. And our biggest change this time is we used to just recirc for an hour and then add a few hops later. Now we actually do additions. Hour, 15-minute, quote-unquote, flame out.
Yeah, right.
But at 185, there's some disagreement in the community. I've read it from very reputable sources where isomerization starts. There's clearly the barest hint of bitterness in this.
Right.
With 14% alpha acids. If there was real isomerization going on, you would taste it. But we'll recirc over and we'll get a whole bunch of profiles, then pump it in, which means that if you want to make something like this, you have to brew well hot, super high octane, and bring it back down. Mm-hmm.
So that goes in post fermentation.
Yes.
Okay.
You're basically adding a hop tea to your mead after fermentation.
Right. I think Eric ferments it at 9 to 10%, and then adds all that tea so that he has as much liquid volume pulling those constituents out, because mead doesn't really care when you add the water. As long as your fermentation max out. I mean, our strain will go to 18% if we wanted it to. You'd start getting weird esters at that point. But but we'll ferment it to 9 or 10. Then you pump your tea underneath, running cold water behind, so you're not shocking that honey too much. Then it's dry hopped with the same Seven Seas blend.
Wow.
Which I have to climb into the tank and haul out.
Wow.
But not as much as if that was the only way you added the
hops. Right. But the real thing is I have to climb into the mix tank to get the hop bags out.
So it's not full of CO2.
No, which is fine. We have ladders to get in and out of there. Yep. It's just a loud day.
This is awesome.
This is lovely. Yeah. I really, really like this a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk to the hop man.
Yeah.
Mr. Hop.
It's delicious. I love the hop profile. You know, I'm always one of you. More, give me more hops, right? You know, so
done. Oh,
he's offering you more. Well, this has been wonderful. It's been a whirlwind tour, but they can find you on the YouTubes.
Yes.
And what's your channel?
So it's Grunfell, G-R-O-E-N as in Nancy, N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, E-L-L. Google that. We're the only thing with that name that exists. I came up with it at 2 in the morning. Super nerdy. It literally just means Vermont in Old Norse. And what's weird is I don't speak Old Norse. And I knew it at 2 a.m. Anyway, the gifts of the mead. Anyway, so Grunfell.com, Havoc Mead.
Yeah, havocmead.com.
Just like you'd think it's spelled. And if you have questions, send them to me. I love to answer them because that's really how I learn.
All right. Thanks, Ricky. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. It was great to be back.
Woohoo! Well, thanks again to Ricky and Kelly. Again, you can find Ricky on the YouTubes. Search for Ask the Mead Maker. And search for the Grunfell... I hope I'm pronouncing that right, and Havoc Meads in your stores around Vermont. And they really are wonderful and tasty. And thanks, as usual, to Steve Wilkes, Andy Sparks, Bob Stimsky, and mad fermentationist Mike Tonsmeyer for helping out. You can find Mike at madfermentationist.com, and you can find his American Sours book wherever good beer books are sold. Brewing books. And boy, I'm inspired after that conversation to make another mead. Maybe I'll find some funky flavors to put in there as well. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all of that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Chef's Choice Pronto Pro Angle Select Diamond Hone 3-Stage Manual Knife Sharpener and Welland Acacia Wood Sauerkraut Pounder. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like an Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all. Until next time, everybody. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long. We'll miss you, Larry.